Sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into The Drive on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, and after a fun show on the road yesterday, at back in the WOW Business Studio.
That's right, and you can get you can get 2 months free on super fast business internet when you switch to WOW. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com. Bill, secure, reliable internet, more important than ever.
And you're absolutely right about that.
And the folks at WOW can get you a great deal. So switch to wowbusiness.com to find out more about WOW Business.
And back here in the WOW Business Studio, where hour number one of The Drive is brought to you by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and where they are also the sponsor of our hotline, the number to get you through from anywhere, the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. Now, little programming note, just got word, Barrett Salee with us most Tuesdays. He said there was a last-minute schedule change and Youngster's Little League game was starting right now. So they'd moved it up. He thought the game was I think the game was supposed to have been at 6 Eastern. They moved it to 5. So Barrett's busy coaching right now. I wanted to talk with him about opening day coming up on Thursday.
Yeah, can we try to reschedule Barrett for later in the week? I'd love to talk to him about the NL East and everything going on. We talked to Jake Crane a couple of weeks ago when he was at like a little league game or something.
That's right.
And there was a ball, the ball game going on in the background.
You can hear the ping of the bat.
That's
in the
right. The ambiance of a sporting event.
Ballpark in the spring.
Of course. And yeah, so it's a shame that we're not going to get to talk to Barrett Salee today. There's a lot going on with his beloved Atlanta Braves as as opening day just a few days away.
What a division the National League East could be this year.
I think it's we said this the last time we talked to Barrett that I think it's the only division in baseball where all five teams really, truly, honestly think they've got a chance to make the playoffs. I think every other division has a team or two.
I think all five teams, yeah, feel like there's a way of getting in, whether they win it or not. Everybody has at least a shot of being a wild card team.
Right, and it seems like there's a team pretty clearly picking up the rear in every other division in baseball.
At least one.
But right. In the NL East, it seems like it could be difficult to get two in. Even if two of the best four teams in the NL might be in the NL East, but they might not be able to get two in because they're going to be beating each other up all year.
Right, because the five teams top to bottom are better than the other divisions in the National League. So, yeah, we can talk about that, but yes, sort of a shame that we won't get Barrett today about that, but there is plenty to talk about tonight. I mean, there are some really interesting possibilities. You could have, after tonight, your final four could be 3-1s and a 2.
Which earlier in the tournament, as top-seeded teams, if you go back to the first weekend when Ohio State and Iowa and Texas and Illinois,
right.
These teams that got bounced, you didn't think that we were going to see chalk rise all the way through at practically every region, and yet we could have 3-1s and a 2 in the final four if the two favorites win tonight.
But the other thing you could have a crosstown matchup possible with USC and UCLA playing those number one seeds, Gonzaga and Michigan, tonight.
Yeah, the possibility of the rivalry game in the Pac-12 another edition of it in the Final Four.
What is the closest that we've ever had to something like that? Is there maybe been, has there been like a Philly matchup?
Has there been a Duke Carolina?
for the national championship?
In the Final Four, has there been? I mean, I know there was Duke Maryland. That was an ACC rivalry when they played each other. I think we've had Louisville Kentucky, haven't we?
Yeah,
we've had a Louisville Kentucky game in the Final Four. I believe.
I'm just thinking though, but. Something in the same city.
No,
two teams from the same city.
I don't. You know, I wonder.
And that's quite a reach right now when you're talking about Gonzaga and Michigan the way they have played here in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder. I wonder if we've ever had something that close. But the rivalry, between USC and UCLA. Yeah, you could get that. You'd need a pair of pretty serious upsets.
Yes, you would.
Gonzaga about a 9-point favorite. I think Michigan six and a half, depending on where you see it. So, I mean, but both of the one seeds are the favorites tonight. Could we see an upset? I mean, UCLA's been playing very well, but Michigan is one of the teams that people thought going in had a great shot to win it. Gonzaga is playing
great,
unbelievable basketball right now.
The way they played, I mean.
But if any team in this field looks like they could at least give Gonzaga trouble through the first couple of games of this tournament, I mean, USC's right there in the tier of ignoring everything else you've seen except this tournament. Who's looked the best? Like, USC's on that short list of teams that have looked as good as anyone in how they've played. So I don't know what we're going to see tonight in either game. If Gonzaga rolls through USC the way they've rolled through some of the other teams in this tournament, I mean, it's another alarm bell that we could be seeing something really historic with this Bulldogs team. And maybe, I mean, Michigan UCLA on paper seems like it'll be a little bit more competitive just because of how well Gonzaga's playing. But I mean that's UCLA's flirted with disaster a couple of times in this tournament. They've gotten away with it. They were almost eliminated by Michigan State in the first four game. Alabama
haven't they come from behind in every game?
They've come from behind in nearly every game. They controlled Abilene Christian pretty thoroughly. But they've had to mount two serious comebacks just to get this far. Now they've got the Michigan Wolverines, a team that's right there with anybody in the country. So yeah, I think a pair of great-looking Elite Eight games tonight to decide who goes to the Final Four and plays on Saturday.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, they will be playing a 1 and a 2 seed from last night. Interesting ball games last night that both saw the eventual winner and the top seeds get out to leads that looked like, okay, it's about to be over, and then to see the other teams come storming back, and in both games last night, Oregon State and Arkansas, did it seem like they just decided or wasted too much time at the end when they still had a shot?
You mean instead of fouling?
Yes.
There were times when they were letting. I mean, I think that the
because
game
they would eventually foul, but they let 20 or 30
yes.
seconds run and then foul.
No, it was a little bit like they were straddling the fence of if they really wanted to foul and continue the game or just pack it in at that point. I mean, it was a little bit confusing. I'm not sure that's why, like, in the Arkansas game.
In the Arkansas game, Arkansas could not hit anything for, what was it, about 8 minutes? They missed 10 or 11 straight shots?
Sure. Well, and in both games, you saw sort of a similar story play out in that you had a team jump out to, what was Baylor up 19 in the first half?
Yeah.
I think Baylor jumped out to a 19-point lead. Houston led Oregon State by 17 at the half. And then
Oregon State had 17 at the half.
Yes.
They had 17. Yeah. I mean, 34-17. I was doing something, and I said, well, I'll catch up. It'll be about halftime. And I went, it can't be halftime because it's 34-17.
And in fact, it was halftime, and Oregon State had 17 points. And both teams fought back, played really well in the opening minutes of the second half to cut into the lead. Oregon State ended up tying it off that ridiculous banked three, the deep banked three for Oregon State to tie the game with a few minutes left in it was 55 all when Oregon State tied it up with about 4 minutes left, and from that point on it was all Houston. I mean, Houston goes on it was 55 all and it was 67-58 with 11 seconds to go.
Right.
So do the math there, 12-3 run mm-hmm. in the final four minutes. Oregon State hits a three at the very end of the game. But it was all Houston the final 4 minutes.
And then Arkansas, on the other hand, I mean, as you said, Arkansas is way down. And they came back and cut it to four and had the ball. And shooting a three that could have cut the lead to one, that was the first of their 0-4, whatever, 10 or 11 straight misses and turnovers. Arkansas got sloppier with the ball and just, could not make a shot. And you felt it's like they really felt the pressure all of a sudden once they got close.
There were a couple of stories regarding players in foul trouble in the Arkansas-Baylor game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's J.D. Note, right, who fouls mm-hmm. out.
Fouled out with 13 minutes.
Picks up a fourth, stays in the game after picking up his fourth, and then on the subsequent possession mm-hmm. gets an offensive foul driving to the basket, fouls out on that fifth foul with 13 minutes to go. He'd maybe been Arkansas's best player in the game to that point when he fouls out. And then for Baylor, they take that big lead. Davion Mitchell, Auburn fans remember.
Wow, what a game he had.
What a game. He's really something.
He was quicker looking last night than I've ever seen.
He gets to the bat. I mean, the announcer Rafferty and Grant Hill were sort of, you know, coming up with different point guards to compare him to throughout the broadcast with mm-hmm. the way he gets to the basket. Stephon Marbury and Gary Payton and guys who got name checked for what they could do. Davion Mitchell looked he looked sensational last night. And the Arkansas run starts when he goes to the bench,
right,
with foul trouble. I mean, Baylor's in control of that game. Davion Mitchell has to sit down. That's when Arkansas gets back in. And Davion Mitchell, once Arkansas got to four, he was a huge part of that Baylor run. And in most years, if there wasn't a team like Gonzaga out there, you'd look at Baylor and say national champions. You'd mm-hmm. say that team
right.
playing like that. And Bruce Pearl's probably an expert on this because he played both Gonzaga and Baylor, and he can tell you about both of them.
Yeah, they're different. I mean, but yeah, Baylor has such quickness and ball handling and just the ability to move the ball around and get somebody an open look. And they have so many different guys that can hurt you.
And regardless, we'll continue. I was going to say,
but it's interesting that their backcourt used to be here in the state of Alabama. I mean, because Davion Mitchell obviously spent a year at Auburn, and the year he was redshirting at Baylor was the year that Jared Butler, signed with Alabama, and then was it Lewis? Yeah, I guess it was when Kyra Lewis reclassified, he asked out and got out of his commitment, his signature with Alabama, and that was his freshman year at Baylor. So, I mean, the Baylor backcourt, former Auburn and Alabama signees and players.
That's right, and they're experienced and really outplaying any backcourt they come across. I mean, it's the strength, one of the strengths of the Baylor team. And now that they've made a Final Four for the first time under Scott Drew, who's been there nearly 20 years, I do think it's another chance for people to appreciate the job he's done at that school. It's a place with virtually no tradition as a basketball power. Mm-hmm. I mean, they went from 1950 until Scott Drew got hired with one NCAA tournament appearance, I believe. And when he got there, I mean, you can look it up. We don't need to get into the problems at Baylor basketball that led to Scott Drew taking that job. You can read the grim Wikipedia report, but I think it was Seth Davis last night who said, I mean, it was the circumstances when Scott Drew took the Baylor job were as bad as any circumstances at any basketball program in recent memory. And it's hard to pick a harder thing to come back from.
That's true.
And at a place with no basketball tradition. And to turn it into what they've been pretty consistently for the last decade, but especially, I mean, if you remember, they were playing as well as anybody when the tournament was called off last year.
Yep.
And this year's team is, I mean, they look like if Gonzaga's not the best team, it's the Baylor Bears. And that's, I mean, it's pretty incredible. And Scott Drew, if he gets a championship this year, you know, there's no more he's under the radar. He's not recognized as a great coach. But even if he doesn't, I mean, to take them from there to here is, I mean, I don't know another coach as much as I like Bruce Pearl. I don't know if I can look at a coach in college basketball who hasn't won a championship, and even some of the ones who have won championships, and say they've done a better job, a more impressive job at their school building something the way Scott Drew has. I mean, that guy's he's in the top tier.
No question about that. We're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Mentioned no Barrett Salee, but as far as I know, I mean, we should have Jake Crane from the J-Boy show on, right?
Yeah, unless he's got a Little League game to go to or something. Yeah, we'll talk with
that. Yeah, so we should have him at the bottom of hour number two. So we're wide open until then. Anything on your mind? Sports-wise, it's a week off for Auburn football, as there's no spring break on campus, but the players are getting a week away from the practice field. They're supposed to work out, though, and lift three times this week. Alabama had their pro day going on today. A lot of scouts there in Tuscaloosa today to watch Mac Jones.
There seems to be something going on with Mac Jones.
Sure does, and, doesn't it? There's some serious buzz that he has skyrocketed up the draft charts.
Let's talk some more about Mac Jones and that in the next segment.
We'll do that, and also Mark Murphy from inside the Auburn Tigers listing some candidates that he says good sources say Auburn has shown interest in as far as the women's basketball coaching position. We can get into that as well. And, of course, take your phone calls, 334-321-1390 on the Kia of Auburn hotline as we continue here on the Tuesday Drive.
Hey, I'm ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the WOW Business Studio. And we'd love for you to join in on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. As we were talking going to break, yes, today, Pro Day in Tuscaloosa, and a big crowd of coaches and front office personnel showing up to watch Alabama, and it seemed especially to watch Mac Jones.
That's right. Mac Jones seems like more than maybe any other player, if you're to believe media reports and what's being put out by teams, and especially teams picking at the top of the NFL draft. It seems like the opinion of Mac Jones has really changed for the better in the last few months, and he's gone from being maybe fifth on most draft boards as far as quarterbacks go, beyond Lawrence and Justin Fields and Trey Lance from North Dakota State and Wilson from BYU. Yeah. It seems like maybe Mac Jones is higher on some lists than fifth. And I guess the hot rumor right now is that the San Francisco 49ers just made a very big trade to move up in the 2021 NFL draft order. They gave up three first round picks, I believe, in order to in order to move up to the third overall pick, which they got from Miami. And San Francisco, usually when a team makes a trade like that, it's with a quarterback in mind, especially if you don't have your long-term answer at the position on the team right now. So San Francisco makes that move, and then Chris Sims, the NFL analyst who has made his opinion about Mac Jones, felt he tosses out there, you know, he thought San Francisco was making that move for Mac Jones. And it's worth pointing out that Kyle Shanahan, the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, apparently right, on very good terms with Chris Sims, mm-hmm, and it's I don't know, I think could that be where this is ending up, is with, and I guess the other thing to point out would be that the San Francisco Brain Trust, John Lynch, the general manager, and Kyle Shanahan, the head coach, they chose to go to Mac Jones's pro day today,
not, yeah,
instead of Justin Fields' pro day at Ohio State.
Not Ohio State's. That is right. And that's been noticed by a lot of people. Daniel Jeremiah also saying, you know, that everything points to the 49ers drafting Mac Jones. Did you watch any of it? Did you see any of Mac Jones' pro day. I turned it on for just a couple of minutes, just in time to see a couple of pretty good overthrows. And I saw a couple of eyes roll as he overthrew Devontae Smith, and I think it was Najee on another one by a good 4 or 5 yards on a couple of deep throws. But he was doing something, though, that you don't see a lot of quarterbacks doing. I mean, he was making more deep throws than you usually see at a pro day.
I wonder if that's in response to a belief that arm strength isn't just a
oh, he showed arm strength.
That's what I mean. I wonder if he's, you know, if he's trying to address criticism that arm strength isn't one of his better attributes, and so he's trying to showcase that in a draft with a lot of quarterbacks who seem to possess arm strength, seemingly a quarterback heavy draft. I mean, because we've now mentioned five guys that could be among the first five or six players taken in the draft. Mm-hmm. There's still Kyle Trask out there. There's still Kellen Mond out there, who people think of as options for NFL teams in this draft. So Mac Jones seemingly has improved his stock, and we'll see if he can. It would be if he finishes as a top five draft pick. I mean, that's skyrocketing from where people thought he was even back when the national championship game happened.
Well, just
I mean, he might go ahead of his receivers.
Oh, I know. I mean, if he goes to the 49ers, he's third.
Yeah.
He's going third.
Yeah,
which is high. Who would have thought a year ago? Right now, go back a year ago when there was talk that, well, Bryce Young very well could be the starting quarterback before midseason, and that Mac Jones was just a placeholder, and then Tua goes number five. I mean, the possibility of Mac Jones, if somebody had said last, all right, let's do it a little over a year ago before COVID. Somebody had said, while we're going along getting ready for spring ball, that, oh, a year from now, Mac Jones might be going higher than Tua. You would have been ridiculed for saying something.
No, I mean
like that.
Nobody saw that happening, and it's a. It's a testament to Mac Jones, sure, but it's also. I mean, that's a feather in the cap of Steve Sarkisian, right? I mean, to think that you took Mac Jones and what he was as a recruit, and after you're done coaching him, you know he's a top five pick in the draft. I mean, that's something a coach can brag about for a very long time and use on the recruiting trail. When he's trying to find the next quarterback at Texas. So let's do the Mark Murphy story about the women's basketball.
Yeah, Mark Murphy from Inside the Auburn Tigers. Of course, Jason Caldwell will be on with us tomorrow in the first hour. You know, we've had a couple of folks wondering about the open spot there with Auburn women's basketball, with Coach Flo now being replaced. And Mark listing some candidates, he said that he believes Auburn has shown some level of interest in. And we've heard a couple of the names are familiar, that I'm familiar with, a couple of others that I'm not as familiar. You may be more familiar with them, Dan, having, you know, been involved with women's basketball this year. But the names, and he listed them alphabetically. So this is not in any particular order, alphabetically.
Roughly how long is the list?
This is only like four names
This
list. Right. Yeah, so the first name is Katie Abramson Henderson, and definitely familiar with her as she is a former Georgia player.
Yep.
And then finished her career
at Iowa
playing for Vivian Stringer. Started for Andy Landers and Vivian Stringer, and she's now at Central Florida, has been at Central Florida 4 or 5 years, and has led them to, in her first 4 years, consecutive 20-win seasons. This year, they only played 21 games, but they went 16-5. So she is she was mentioned. She was a very good player. Very good player. Parade in USA Today All-American.
She was an assistant from Iowa. She was an assistant for Felicia Leggett Jack, who we've talked about before, the Buffalo coach. She was on the bench.
Oh, that's right.
She was on the bench in Indiana for the Buffalo coach as well.
Hmm. Okay. The next name mentioned is Amaka. Now I'm probably butchering her last name. Agugwa Hamilton.
Okay.
who is the head coach at Missouri State.
Second straight Missouri State coach you've named on this list. Katie Abramson coached there from 02 to 07. So you've had two straight Missouri. She was the Missouri State coach about 15 years ago, and now you've got the current Missouri State coach.
Missouri State has been okay.
That's right. Well, she got the Coach Mox got the job there when Kelly Harper left for Tennessee.
For Tennessee,
and she's maintained a high quality basketball program there.
Yep. So she is mentioned. They were in the Sweet 16. Let's see. And then her overall head coaching record is 49-7. Next up is Gail Gostenkors, former Duke and Texas head coach, who's now the associate head coach at Central Michigan.
Now, that one, when was she the Duke coach?
She was a Duke coach back in 90, starting in 1992.
Okay, because I was going to say.
And then was it Duke? She's got 498 victories as a head coach.
Yeah, and I guess the surprising thing there would be, even though she was on the Central Michigan bench this year, she hasn't been a head coach in college basketball since 2012. So it would be sort of a surprise to see Auburn go in that direction, although she was a coach from 92 to 2012.
And then Tina Langley at Rice, who was a candidate for the Tennessee job as well, and her teams have won at least 20 games since her first season.
And I know somebody personally who's a huge fan of Tina Langley and thinks that the next place to hire her will do very well.
And they won the WNIT over Ole Miss. Got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
1-390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the WOW Business Studio. And we welcome your calls, questions, comments on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. And let's get to it. And Rick is up first. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Pretty good, man.
Listen, I called to brag, okay?
Sure.
To someone who will appreciate it, because my wife doesn't. But in my bracket, I'm 2-for-2 so far. Okay, as Final Four goes. And I actually picked Loyola to win early. I thought Alabama would be playing tonight and would lose to Michigan. So I have Michigan winning, and I have Gonzaga winning. So it's looking like I'll probably be 4-for-4 going into the finals.
And even though they're 3-1s and a 2, I think a lot of people were thinking there'd be upsets and didn't have three number one seeds here in their final.
Yeah, I mean,
four.
It's fine to pick chalk in your bracket as long as you get it right.
Well, the thing is, like in the early games too, I got lucky on some of those. But you know what messed everybody up around here is that I thought Alabama would keep going. Okay, everybody that's in the pool that I'm in, they all had Alabama winning it.
When Alex Reese hit that shot from the top of the key, didn't you think they were right?
I had two words that came to mind. One was holy, and I think the second one was. I really thought that I was really surprised with the way overtime went. But right now, I mean, God, I really wish I would have got into something with money. This is just for fun and bragging. So
right.
My best bracket I've probably ever had in my life, I get nothing for.
You'll get a year of bragging rights, okay? And money fades, but you can figure out how to do it. Look, congratulations, that's an awesome bracket.
Yeah, no kidding. Do you think
both favorites win tonight?
Yeah, I really do. And I not picked it that it would be Gonzaga Baylor and Gonzaga would win. And how hard is that? Okay, I mean nothing hard there, but I'm just like really surprised. So I came to ask you guys a question. I'm wondering about baseball. Baseball tickets specifically, Bill. So since we lost our tickets out in the corner, I have not been able to go to one game. And, you know, I have, you know, go online to try to buy tickets. It pushes me like StubHub. So, I mean, you can't walk up and buy a ticket to any games this year at all, right?
Not that I know of. And man, I hate to tell you this, but I actually had a couple of tickets that I didn't use because what I bought, I had the opportunity to buy. You had like limited number of tickets that you could buy.
Like 11 games, right?
Yeah, so I opted for conference games. I opted for Sunday's games, but I couldn't go Saturday afternoon. If I'd known, I would have gladly emailed you the ticket so you could have gone.
If that happens again, get a hold of Floyd.
Well, Floyd had an extra ticket for the Saturday night game.
Well, Floyd, doggone
you, buddy. Oh, man. Well, see, it's because everything messed up. It was the only opportunity to get a lot of stuff done on Saturday, and by the time I got done, it was too late for me to get over. I was going to go with him for the second game Saturday, but I didn't get done till 7 o'clock.
So
I missed out on three tickets, my two for Sunday and that one for Saturday.
But bunch of tickets available for the series this weekend if you can make it up to Fayetteville.
Well, now that's what to do. Okay, I'm actually getting my pool ready for spring. Priorities, guys, priorities.
Just having to deal with the pollen in it right now is what's tons of fun.
Man, I went and bought a new pressure washer today, and I am so glad I did. But, you know, Josh White and Big Ball tomorrow, but I did anything. I don't know. We'll see.
See, I've got to wait till the pollen stops. I don't want to pressure wash everything, then have it turn yellow again.
Well, see, my plan is to repaint my deck this year.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to do it for probably another few weeks, I think. You know, wait until this pollen's all done. Because once I start, man, I got to do it all.
I know.
You know. All right, well, thanks, War Eagle. And, I'll send Floyd.
Yeah, do. I mean, it's, you know, usually I'm planning on being there, but, you know, we'll keep you in the loop.
Later.
Congrats, man.
Good talking to you, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, I think older son's doing pretty well in.
Oh yeah.
In one of the pools. Yeah, not me. Ooh, I was toast early, and I mean, I've got the Zags are my only Final Four team that I had left.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I had Gonzaga and or Oklahoma State winning in a couple of pools, and. For entertainment purposes only, of course, and it's it's. I mean, we'll see what happens if Gonzaga wins. You know, I feel like then you get into the situation where a lot of people have the champion, and you gotta break it down based on how well you did in some of the other rounds. I will happily let UCLA continue to destroy my bracket, though, if they want to keep winning and keep advancing. It might end tonight.
I find it hard to believe that it's going to continue. I mean, it's been a great run. Yeah.
It might end tonight. I mean, I think that with all the chaos we've had in the earlier rounds, having an Elite Eight where you have all four favorites win, and I mean, I don't know if you want to say I think Baylor was pretty convincing last night. Four favorites win, three of them going away, that could very well be how things play out tonight, but. I won't be too shocked if one of the two Los Angeles teams are hanging in there and it's a close game at the end.
No, I wouldn't either, and that's why I mean it's still fun to be able to watch. And then
you can't feel good if you're in a close game with UCLA right now.
No, you
either.
Can't. I don't know how comfortable you feel if you get a close to a double digit lead against them.
Sure. I mean, I think that was the case with Arkansas, too. I think they pointed out during the broadcast last night that Arkansas had fallen behind by
double digits.
Double digits in every game thus far in the tournament. And the only other team to do that was a UConn team that won it all. I mean, eventually your luck runs out playing like that, but we'll see if UCLA can stretch it to at least one more game.
334-321-1390, that's the number to get you through to the drive here every day, the Kia of Auburn hotline, and let's get back to it. And Matt is up next. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. I got a couple of quick questions. The first one, it's been documented on this show and others about how many, you know, like 800 basketball transfers in Division I or something.
Mm-hmm.
How are coaches and staffs going to manage their roster if they don't pass the immediately eligible rule, because they'll have so many, they'll probably have four or five players that are transferring that have to sit out. So you've only got, you know, maybe six, eight players that can actually play now, unless you have a graduate transfer or two in there. I mean, it's going to be so hard to put a team out there that's deep.
Well, that appears to be the least of the concerns that the coaches and schools have, because I don't think there's anyone who doesn't expect that to pass. I mean, I think Barrett Sallee
doesn't think so, right?
No, I think Barrett does. I think he was thinking that it would pass and then take effect after a year, but I think the NCAA is going to go ahead and say it's good because of everyone that's out there now expecting to be eligible next year. I just don't see any way the NCAA could not pass this.
Were there, and I asked this sort of embarrassed that I don't know the answer, were there players sitting out this year because they weren't eligible? Like, can you think of anybody, like off the top of your head, who transferred somewhere and didn't get to play this academic year? I know
I'm
transfers
sure there
were,
are.
I mean, just because it seems like we heard far fewer stories about that than we usually do.
How often do you hear about the players who aren't playing?
I guess it's, if there's a high profile one, right? I mean, they tend to be, you know, you tend to know the status of their eligibility.
Yeah, sometimes there's one or two that are practicing. I guess they can practice. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I hope it happens. I'm not saying it for football, basketball, all sports, but it would be just a complete disaster. Not disaster.
It's going to be such a mess. And what we talked about it a little bit yesterday, Matt. Just looking at the dates where things line up. Now that we know that the NBA draft is July 29th, and that players have until May 30th to announce if they're going to enter the draft, and they have until July 19th to pull out of the draft, but the signing period starts April 14th. So you've got 6 weeks after the signing period starts, players can still be entering the draft. And we're not even talking about the transfer portal. Players that are leaving or are going to be evaluated and think about getting into the NBA draft. And then what happens when they decide or they find out they're not going to be drafted and maybe it would be better for them to go back to college? How do coaches and schools handle all those guys as well as all the transfers coming in and out while they're trying to adjust their rosters, not knowing for sure who's coming back?
And there is, I guess, a story. Well, there have been two stories regarding immediate eligibility in the last few weeks. The ACC getting rid of the rule that prevented interconference transferring in anticipation of a one-time only or a one-time transfer rule taking effect later this year. And you've also got the kid at TCU who transferred there from Oklahoma. Chandler something. It might be Chad Morris's kid. It's Chad Morris's kid who transferred from Oklahoma to TCU, and Lincoln Riley is against players transferring within the conference and being eligible immediately. So actually Chandler Morris has not been released from his Oklahoma scholarship yet. And if the rule isn't changed and Lincoln Riley doesn't change his mind, he'll be ineligible to play at TCU this fall, unless the Big 12 changes the rule between now and the beginning of the football season.
And we've talked about it too, that the Southeastern Conference still has that similar rule that they have to, right now, they would have to grant a waiver, even if the NCAA says you're eligible immediately. There's still no way that that can just be done automatically unless the SEC drops its ability to block transfers within the conference.
Can I ask you one other quick question before I hang up? Is it? I'm sure I talked about baseball. Is it time to hit the panic button here? I mean, we had some close games and just hadn't been able to finish things out. Is it all injuries, or are we just not as good as we thought we were going to be?
I don't think it's that Auburn's not as good. I think injuries have affected things, but we were talking about it. We're talking about it some yesterday as well, that I think right now it's a concern with the team mentally, you know, on the mound and at the plate. I mean, I think they're pressing. Anytime it seems Auburn has a rally and scores some runs, the pitchers go out there thinking, man, I've got to have a perfect inning, and they either throw the ball right down the middle or they walk the leadoff batter, it seems like. And then when it gets close at the end of the ball games, even though Auburn may have had, you know, 10 or 12 hits and, you know, been hitting the ball well. If they get a man or two on base, it seems like they press, they squeeze the bat tight, and they strike out. So right now, I think it's becoming a mental thing for this team that they're pressing so hard that they need something good to happen for them. It may not be time to press the panic button, but you better know where it is now.
Yeah, I think they haven't been right since they gave up eight runs
in the ninth inning.
I guess it's Boston College, whatever. But mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Hey, appreciate it, Matt. Yes, good stuff. I mean, now they're if there were a simple solution, I guarantee you, Butch and Gabe and Tim and you know Carl would have just made that switch. But it's something that just can't get in the heads of 18 to 21 year olds who are, you know, playing that game, that momentum and just the psychological part of it just can get bigger and bigger.
And the injuries shouldn't be discounted. I mean, it is a team that doesn't have the pitching staff they thought they would. And this year in the SEC, I think as a pitching staff, your margin for error is slim enough against these lineups that if you're going in shorthanded, it can really hurt you. And we were looking at the statistics yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the most unbelievable number I've ever seen. Auburn offensively, some of the numbers look pretty good. Now they're leaving way too many runners on base. They're struggling with runners in scoring position. But was that the team ERA you showed me yesterday? Is that just conference play?
That is in the six conference games.
Well, yeah, Auburn is 0-6, but their team earned run average in conference play is 744.
0-6 as a team, 52 innings pitched, 63 hits in 52 innings pitched.
Which is bad, but that's not the worst I've ever seen, but
30 walks.
30 walks in 52 innings. That's what I was talking about. I mean, this is a team. Butch Thompson's always been about strike one,
and 43 earned runs, which is more than anyone else in the league, and you've got half the league having given up 31 or fewer earned runs.
You're at almost 50% more than most of the league.
You want to guess Vanderbilt through six games?
Vandy through six games. Wow, with Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker. Probably around a two.
The ERA is 1.67.
Oh, wow.
54 innings, 10 earned runs in 54 innings.
Well, Jack Leiter, by the way, Al Leiter, a former major leaguer who's on an MLB network. Jack Leiter is out pitching Kumar Rocker right now. He's already thrown a no-hitter and seven no-hit innings in his second SEC start.
They're going to be such a hard out for anybody. Like, I mean, that is...
They may be the top two picks in the Major League draft.
Yeah. And you know what? And we could be... I wouldn't say we're quite there yet, but I think we're a few years away from Vanderbilt stars. Oh, I mean, there are a good number of Vandy stars
in Major League Baseball
right
now.
I mean, I guess I don't want to discount the ones we have now, but it just seems like between guys in the minors and guys...
I try to have at least one on my roster every year.
You try to have a Vanderbilt player?
I had Sonny Gray last year. I had to go back for David Price this year, but I mean, he's not even in the rotation.
I got
Pedro Alvarez. I mean, they have turned out just some ridiculous. Dansby Swanson,
JJ Bleday,
yeah,
who might go on and on. Walker Buehler,
yeah,
pretty good. There's on top of that, the guys on the current team who look like they're making a, you know, we could see Leiter and Rocker in baseball very soon.
Oh yes, I think you will. All right, let's get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join us on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390, as we continue here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive 7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final couple of minutes of hour number one here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan taking your calls, questions, comments, anything on your mind sports wise. Got the final two of the final four will be determined this evening after Houston and Baylor advanced last night. Gonzaga, what's the order of the games tonight? let's see, okay, the Southern Cal Gonzaga is the early game, and that'll be followed by UCLA and Michigan.
That's right. And by the way, I looked it up. Indianapolis is in the Eastern time zone. That game is starting. Okay. That game
started at 9:57.
That game is starting at 10 o'clock local time in Indianapolis tonight. So yeah, a late one for the TV audience. I'm sure the West Coast TV audience will appreciate that with USC Gonzaga and then UCLA and quite a few Michigan alums in Los Angeles as well. But for the rest of us. That's a late one. That second one. I mean, I'll be able to stay up for UCLA tonight, but that's a late one. But we'll get that. We'll know the rest of the Final Four tonight. And these are at least on paper, two really intriguing basketball games. Even if you would give the edge, and I think understandably give the edge to the favorite in both games, but USC's playing at an extremely high level. This is probably Andy Enfield's best team since he got there.
Oh yeah,
Evan Mobley is looks like a surefire NBA player and maybe one of the first couple picks in the draft. So they could give Gonzaga some trouble. And UCLA, I mean they've overcome adversity throughout this tournament and yet somehow they're still here. So we'll see if they can tap into some of that magic against Michigan.
I guess the reason I thought Indianapolis was in the Central Time is the times are listed in Central Time. So and usually it's listed local time there, but that's funny. When I look at ESPN, just for the schedule, it says 6:15 Central Time, which is the time here, but it'll be 7:15 there. All right, we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. Again, Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show joins us at the bottom of the hour. Till then, we're wide open. Come on in and join us in hour number two of the Tuesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Sunny now. Turned out to be a pretty nice looking afternoon. Now, don't hold me to this weather for the next few days. I believe it's supposed to rain a pretty good bit and maybe have some threatening weather here over the next 36 hours.
Is that tomorrow's day where it could get?
I believe tomorrow and then tomorrow night there's a chance of some nasty stuff.
And I believe you can leave it open, Drew. It's fine. And I think tonight after the show, the Auburn area is supposed to get a little bit of rain as well.
Right.
So,
yeah. So maybe Matt will get finished up. I saw he was doing some things in the yard that I'd asked him to before they head out of town for a few days. But yeah. So you might want to go ahead and get some things done. Looks like we're going to get a little rain and cooler weather as we head up toward Easter.
Yeah. Tomorrow night.
It's going to be in the 30s.
Yeah. 30. I thought we were maybe done below 40 weather for the next few months, but no, a couple last gasp of winter a little bit.
Well, my wife says there's always a cold snap just before Easter, and Easter is earlier this year, so maybe it will be warmer a little sooner consistently, but do be ready for that. Looks like it's going to be a nice Easter weekend. We mentioned yesterday we were talking about baseball a little earlier. Baseball, of course. The SEC, because of Easter weekend, SEC playing, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Auburn will be in Fayetteville Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Jack Owen back in the rotation. So hopefully, he can give the Auburn pitching staff a literal shot in the arm.
Auburn is Auburn's in need of a boost this weekend. I mean, anything that could that could help would be big, because like you said, and look I don't know if it's more important than it is in other sports, like ignoring is it confidence is so important in baseball.
Well, it is it's one where though it's a team sport, but it's individual for the pitcher or the hitters, whatever, it's them standing in there. The other guys can't help you while you're making a pitch or while you're in the batter's box.
And it just seems like that's a sport where, things can start rolling downhill and it can be tough to, it can be tough to stop. And right now things are rolling downhill for Auburn, and you need to find a way to change some of this momentum. and Arkansas in Fayetteville looking like maybe the best non-Vanderbilt team in the country right now is not exactly what you'd like to see on the menu after this 0-6 start in the SEC. But I mean, if you're going to be playing great teams the rest of the way, like I mean, more often than not. So that's that just comes with the territory. It's about trying to it's about trying to change the direction that the conference season has started with.
Yeah, and I know we've talked that the season's just 20% in, but you're 0-6. So, I mean, it's a steep hill to climb. You know, maybe 500 is a little too much to expect. But you better, if you're hoping of making the postseason, you better at least be able to go 13-11 over the last 24 games, and you look at the schedule, and you got to start winning. You can't afford to get swept this weekend. Absolutely. I mean, if you're 0-9, it's almost unreasonable to think you're going to go 13-8 from that point on. So what you try to do is make sure you get at least one this week, and then, just play it as you, as it comes. But they've got to get that first one. They got to get the first one. They've got to get, no matter how it comes, if it comes on the other team kicking the ball around and you getting one that maybe you didn't feel you deserved or a little bleeder or Texas leaguer or whatever or wild pitches, whatever it takes, or a blowout. I mean, you just need to get that first one, get the monkey off your back, get the confidence, and that's what they're hoping that they can get done this weekend as they go to go up to Fayetteville. 334-321-1390. That is the Kia of Auburn hotline to get you through as we're back here in the WOW Business Studio for hour number two.
Yeah, I mean, looking ahead to tonight's two Elite Eight games, excited about what we could see from what's been. Look, maybe the atmosphere hasn't been there like in normal tournaments, given the circumstances. But I think all told, it's been a great NCAA tournament thus far.
Maybe, I think so too.
Maybe some of that is just the fact that we didn't have one last year, and it's just the excitement about having one. But I thought the first four games. I mean, if you remember how the tournament started, that Michigan UCLA game in the first four on Thursday night. Overtime games to begin, Florida Virginia Tech to start the action. You had Arkansas Colgate. You had some really wild game. I mean, Ohio State lost very early on in the draw to Oral Roberts. Illinois went down opening weekend to Loyola. I mean, I think there's been some. This thing's been really fun, and I'm not just saying that as someone rooting for one of the final six teams left in the dance.
No, somebody yesterday remember. Said, well, but there hasn't been a buzzer beater. That for the one shining moment, they always show the buzzer beaters for the win. There haven't been any of those, but there have been overtimes. There have been upsets. There's been drama in that you can't really turn away. If you turn away from a game that appears to be in hand, all of a sudden the other team makes a run. I mean, I don't know how many times games have appeared to be, well, you can change a channel, come back later on, and then all of a sudden you realize that's a ball game again.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I mean, we had two of those last night. I mean, we had two games last night where it looked like, maybe Baylor's huge lead was early, but in both games it looked like it was going to go one way, and that's not how it ended up playing out. In both games right. Last night, it looked like this thing was going to be a 20-plus point lead throughout and an easy win, a walkover for Baylor, or a walkover win for Houston. That's not what happened. I mean, the Oregon State-Houston game was tied with under four on the clock before Houston went on a run to sort of put them away. And that Baylor team, I mean, they would not go away, and they had some tough breaks. The better team won. I mean, I think that that was a game. Maybe even more so than the Oregon State game, that was a game where 5 minutes in, it looked like Arkansas was in huge trouble. I mean, 5 minutes into Arkansas Baylor, you were thinking, or at least I was thinking, like, oh, this will be this will be a commanding Baylor victory. Arkansas's. I mean, it looked like Arkansas was going to struggle to do anything well on either side of the floor. And, I think the combination of Davion Mitchell getting in some foul trouble and Arkansas putting some things together, getting some great play off the bench before JT Note fouled out, Arkansas was able to make that one a lot closer. And that's you make this point a lot, Bill. Everyone in Auburn who looks at the Auburn basketball team and thinks, well, this year was a minor setback, but Auburn basketball will be fine because this team is young and talented. You know, you like to point out how young and talented the rest of the conference is.
Oh, I think Auburn basketball will be fine under Bruce Pearl, and I think they'll be much better next year. But, yes, the other thing is look at the competition, though. I think the whole league is going to be better next year. There's some people going now, you know, once Alabama lost and now Arkansas is out, going, yeah, the SEC was down. But do you look around and go, oh, the whole league's losing everyone? No, not at all. Again, like I said, 17 of the top 20 scorers were freshmen and sophomores. Now, they're players that are entering the transfer portal, it seems like, all the time from all over. I don't know. Since Alabama's lost, we haven't seen anything. It seems like most schools, as soon as they lose, somebody's in the transfer portal. You know, Missouri gets bumped, Xavier Pinson's in the pool. You got Noah Locke from Florida is in the transfer portal, and Auburn's among the 20 or so schools that have already contacted him. So, but there are a lot of young players that, as far as I know, are still coming back all over this league.
That's the point, is that it's not that Auburn doesn't have a path to getting back to where they were very recently in the SEC as a basketball program, but there, I mean, it is deep waters. I mean, it is a league full of places that like the way their basketball programs are trending, and the few coaches that the few places that maybe aren't thrilled with how their teams are trending, either have coaches who have done a lot of winning in the past, or I don't even know who would you say is on the hot seat in the conference right now, like men's basketball. Howland?
I heard somebody say that.
Frank Martin,
I would think probably.
He's been to the Final Four,
yeah,
right?
But what's he done for us lately?
No, you're right. I mean, they're struggling. I mean, I would understand a Florida fan thinking they could do better than what they've had under Mike White. I don't know if he's going anywhere per se, but I would understand someone believing that. I guess Will Wade's seat is always. The security of Will Wade's job is always sort of an open.
Maybe not from within.
An open question, but the point I'm making is there are a lot of places in the SEC that really like where they are now and what the future seems to hold for them as men's basketball programs. And the road back to the top. I mean, it's not impossible by any stretch. I mean, Auburn does have the talent and the coach to be much better. Next year in the SEC, the chance is there, but a lot of other teams in the league really like what they're doing right now too.
Oh yeah, so
including Arkansas. I mean, I don't think, despite losing last night, I'm not sure Musselman lost very many fans in the Fayetteville area. Year two, taking them to the first Elite Eight for that program in a very long time, mm-hmm. and being the last SEC team standing, which I think is where. You know, if it's a down year for Kentucky, there are a lot of Arkansas fans that believe in a down year for Kentucky, Arkansas should be the last SEC team in the field. Hasn't been that way for 25
years. No, it hasn't. 25 years. But. And Auburn fans will tell you, now they're still the last SEC team to make it to the Final Four.
It's true. Absolutely right.
334-321-1390 is the number to get you through to the drive. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline. Hour number two of the drive. Brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And once again, we're here in the WOW Business Studio.
That's right. You can get 2 months free on super fast business internet when you switch to WOW. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com.
And let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Shadow gets us going this hour. Hey, Shadow.
Hey, guys. Thank y'all for taking the call. Who were the favorites in the beginning of the basketball season this year?
Tennessee and Florida, I believe.
Nationally or in the conference?
Oh, I was thinking SEC, but yeah.
Well, let's say SEC.
That would be Tennessee and Florida, I believe.
Kentucky, I think, had supporters because right. There were people who believed they could be. Mm-hmm. What was Alabama picked to finish? Do you remember?
Alabama was picked fourth, I think.
LSU was probably in that mix, too.
Remember, Auburn was picked right in the middle of the pack.
Tennessee was the favorite. And, yeah, Florida, yes. Florida, Kentucky, probably two and three.
And Florida lost the preseason player of the year, too.
Okay, so now when it's basically over, would you say that it was right?
Well, no. I mean, I don't think anybody expected the year that Alabama had under Nate Oates this year. And Arkansas stepped up more than people thought. So this year was probably as poor a job in picking the SEC in basketball as we've seen in a long time.
And who were the top rated teams in the SEC nationally?
Preseason or now?
Yeah, preseason.
Tennessee was the definitely the highest.
Wasn't Arkansas in some
Arkansas
polls?
Arkansas was in around. They were in the top 25, I believe. I was going to see if I could find the preseason predictions.
Okay, so once again, I'm just going to start making points on this, and I think I have for some time. But could we not get a little affirmation about preference in the SEC for Tennessee?
They were a little bit of a disappointment. They did make the tournament, I mean, so it's not like they had a terrible year. All right, preseason media predictions had Tennessee 1, Kentucky 2, LSU 3, Florida 4, Alabama 5, Arkansas 6, Auburn 7.
Okay, so I don't know. Is it pretty much like this every year? I
mean, it's usually, you know, let's face it, usually it's Kentucky that's picked at the top of the league.
Okay, how far-fetched would it be for me to say right now that Tennessee and Kentucky will be the top teams preseason?
For next year?
Yeah.
It's not terribly far-fetched, I don't guess.
I think Tennessee's losing quite a bit.
They are.
Kentucky
will be expected to rebound big time.
Yeah, I wonder if Eric Musselman has earned the respect to where people might start assuming that Arkansas is going to have, I mean, and Arkansas has players that could come back and be very good from an Elite Eight team. I would say Kentucky will be solidly a favorite or among the favorites in the SEC, and maybe Arkansas, maybe Alabama maybe Tennessee, maybe Florida in that mix with them.
As far as the change, as far as the transfer versus the regular way that schools recruit, how is that going to change now? I mean, because I feel like that if people would come to Auburn and talk to Bruce, then we would have a definite advantage. But is it now just going to be players are going to look at the teams that are contacting them and make a decision, or will they have unlimited visits? What's the deal?
As far as the rules for what is and isn't allowed if you're recruiting a player in the transfer portal, I think right now the rules are different because the NCAA is still operating under some COVID protocols for recruiting. So you're not getting I don't think you're getting in-person visits to campuses from players or anything like that. I don't think Bruce Pearl and his staff feel. I mean, I don't know if they view this recruiting. The way things have changed and the added emphasis on the transfer portal. I don't know if that's a bad thing for a program like Auburn, because Bruce Pearl is a player that kids want to play for, and they're despite this season maybe not going the way folks hoped, there's still excitement, you know, over the last few years around the Auburn basketball program. It still seems to be a program on the rise with Bruce Pearl, and I don't think that's going to hurt them in recruiting in the portal.
No, no. As a matter of fact, Auburn seems to be mentioned with any player that would fit into Bruce's system. It's not a lack of effort or them contacting, because it seems like every time a player goes into the portal, one of the first names he says contacts him has been Auburn.
Well, what about Auburn's potential disaster as far as trouble with the NCAA once again? How is that going to be used by the competitors of Auburn to keep kids from going to Auburn?
Well, I'm sure that that's something that other coaches don't neglect to, you know. I'm sure. That, I'm
well,
sure
no.
They,
I mean, when you
they,
when
they
you self
remember to mention
when you self impose when you
resolved. Self
impose a postseason ban. I mean, I think it does open up the possibility that people are going to recruit against you with NCAA uncertainty, and that's something that Auburn, you know, until we have some resolution to the FBI corruption scandal and the NCAA fallout from it, that's something that Auburn and every other program named in that scandal is going to have to overcome on the recruiting trail.
Do you believe it's going to be a high percentage that Auburn will be kept out of the tournament next year, or a low percentage?
I would be surprised if Auburn, unless there's something we don't know now, you know, out there, I would, you know, based on the information that's publicly available now, I would be surprised if Auburn, after self-imposing a postseason ban, was banned from the 2022 NCAA tournament. Now, I could be wrong about that. You know, we could find out later. I'm 100% wrong. My guess, I'd be surprised based on what we know now if a one-year self-imposed postseason ban wasn't enough. What about you, Bill?
Yeah, I would too. I mean, again, I'm sure that it's something that'll be mentioned by other schools that are recruiting against Auburn, but I'd be surprised. No, I'd be surprised if there is another postseason ban added. I wouldn't be shocked if there might be a limit of a scholarship or anything like that. But I'd really be surprised if there's a postseason ban. If there's a postseason ban put on, then there had better be something really bad. If there's something really bad, then I don't know that anyone would be as optimistic about the future of Auburn basketball.
But they had been imposing other penalties on themselves, hadn't they?
Auburn has tried to be proactive, but in many cases, other schools around the country have not taken that approach and have been able to get away with a lot less.
Okay. Well, that's pretty much all I got. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Shadow. I sort of get what he's saying. I mean, in that, you know, you look at Arizona State, you look at Oklahoma State, you look at LSU, and they've been able to continue and make the postseason, whereas, you know, for Auburn, you're just hoping that there's nothing else. I know we're running way late. Got to get to our first break of hour number two. Again, Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show joins us in just a few minutes. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Whether you're a
067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Bill and Dan here on this Tuesday afternoon here in the WOW Business Studio. Did you?
I did at the beginning of the hour. I did a couple of times.
Oh, I didn't.
You can switch to wowbusiness.com to find out more details on how you can get some super fast business internet when you switch to WOW. Also wanted to tell people, podcasts of The Drive are available wherever you listen to podcasts. The podcast center at ESPNAU.com, the ESPN 106.7 app, Apple, Google, Spotify. Presented by the Alabama Farmers Federation, visit alphafarmers.org to find out more about the Ag Tag.
Mentioned another transfer that has said that Auburn's been in contact with him, another point guard, and Noah Locke, who is leaving Florida. Jeff Borzello says he, Noah Locke tells ESPN he's heard from, we got enough time? Yeah, I think we do. North Carolina, Kansas, Louisville, Providence, UConn, Tennessee, Arkansas, Auburn, Georgia, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, UCLA, Clemson, Oregon, Virginia, NC State, St. John's, Maryland, Illinois, Indiana, Marquette, Oklahoma State, Alabama, and more.
Okay.
And more. See, pretty much he's heard from...
Could have probably thrown in and more in there 10 schools earlier.
But. Yeah. How about that? Well, you just wanted to make sure you didn't leave somebody out that follows him closely.
Well, maybe he can narrow it down to a top 25 or something soon.
Really? But yes, once again, there's no question.
You think they should get rid of should you be able to transfer in conference? You want to see them get rid of that rule?
Yes, I think so. I think if the NCAA is going to allow you to be able to do that, then I think you're going to have to.
Right.
May not like it, and I guarantee you, fans at the schools where players are leaving aren't going to like it. But fans at the schools where the players want to go absolutely want that rule changed.
There's an Auburn basketball player in the transfer portal right now that is rumored to be considering maybe an SEC school.
And
right?
Auburn fans don't want him to be able to go to Kentucky.
Well, but
Auburn would take the transfer from Florida. I mean, see, that's the thing. It depends on which way the player's going.
Yeah, I think that rule's going to... I mean, I would be surprised if, especially now that the ACC has sort of already started not knocking down the dominoes, I'd be surprised if you had a league holding out and wanting to have a ban on transfers within the conference. Because otherwise, you'd be encouraging talent to leave the league, right? If you had a ban on...
if you're losing a player, then I can just see coaches and fans going, well, that's fine if they don't want to be here until, yeah, like I said, until somebody wants to be here that's somewhere else.
I would say
I think it's got to go.
Yeah, I think those rules will be, especially if this NCAA measure passes. I mean, I cannot imagine those rules. And Dennis Dodd just wrote a thing for CBS Sports about this. You know, that it seems like that's going to go by the wayside. Pretty soon.
I think everybody thinks it's going to happen next month.
And this Lincoln Riley Chandler Morris thing might be something of a catalyst to at least get the Power Five to get rid of rules that give coaches they have to release the player from their scholarships if they want to go play for a different school in the league. I think that's going to be something of a. That's going to be a fossil.
We'll ask Jake about that, get his thoughts on that, and, of course, much more. Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show joining us on the other side as we're at the bottom of hour number two here on the Tuesday Drive. Plenty of time for you to join in as well, but Jake is up next when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
6-7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 25 minutes here on this Tuesday. Bill and Dan here in the WOW Business Studio. And we're going to hold your calls right now because we have an outgoing call on the Kia of Auburn hotline, and we welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest from the J-Boy Show. It's Jake Crane. Hey, Jake, how you doing, man?
Hey, Bill, Dan, how y'all doing? Always fun to come on and talk with y'all.
Oh, man, we're doing fine, enjoying the strange new days of the NCAA tournament. With them now, the Sweet 16 to the Final Four stretching Saturday through Tuesday. But I like it because there's more basketball to watch tonight.
That's true. I just wish they'd play these games a little earlier, man. You know, I'm getting old now. I keep fighting it, having to go through that Baylor-Arkansas game. I don't know what was tougher, Baylor's defense or me trying to stay awake.
Yeah, come on. You're getting a little old. No, what it is you're in the Eastern time zone now, so the games are in and after
That's
midnight.
True.
Although so are the games. The games are in the Eastern time zone, too. Right. And I agree with you for the most part, although I think tonight with UCLA, USC, and Gonzaga is three of the four teams, I think the committee's pretty – I think they're pretty happy about the start times because it makes it easier for the
West. They're going to move last night's up then.
Yeah, they got a little something for the Texas audiences last night. I agree.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, yeah, man, I'm still getting used to the Eastern time zone a little bit. To be honest with you, though, when coaching, I about coached in every time zone up there in Montana, man. It was crazy. I was watching SEC games at like 9 in the morning.
So what are your thoughts through the first couple of through the first couple of rounds of the NCAA tournament? Any individuals or teams or coaches that really stood out to you with how they with how they fared in the dance?
Yeah, well, you know, I was the guy that came on here and said a couple of weeks ago I didn't think an SEC team was going to make the Elite Eight, and Arkansas squeaked by Oral Roberts to get in there, but. You know, we always knew it's a collision course with Gonzaga and Baylor. I don't think anything's going to change. But I'm going to be honest with you, Michigan and what Juwan Howard has done without Livers, especially the way they played against Florida State, very impressed. They got Leonard Hamilton and his bunch out of their element. Very surprised to see Michigan try and turn it into a track meet. I thought it caught Florida State off guard. And, you know, when I watch Michigan play, they seem to get more confident. And if there's any team I think that can sneak in there and maybe upset one of Baylor or Gonzaga, it's probably Michigan.
Oh no, certainly. I think Michigan's been it's been very impressive, considering that they were one of the teams being discounted because they weren't going into the tournament at full strength. They've looked remarkable, and they really looked like a team that could win it all against Florida State.
Yeah, well, I mean, with that Dickinson guy in the middle, you could put ornaments on him and presents underneath him, and he could be a Christmas tree. He's just got to stand in the living room. But, you know, I really love what they do. Mike Smith, their point guard, a guy that looks just like Ezekiel Elliott to me if you look at him, but he really controls the pace of that offense because Franz Wagner hadn't been draining threes. You know, Livers was really their three guy. Wagner was kind of behind him. But they've really done it with an inside-out game and with that size and athleticism. Because if you watch, Michigan's big men cut about as hard as any big man I've seen, and they're able to catch the pass, which a lot of big men can't. They seem real connected. But again, at the end of the day, man, watching Baylor, when they make their mind up that they're going to clamp you down, it's pretty impressive to watch.
Well, we'll have the Final Four after tonight, and there will probably – I don't guess it's probably. There'll continue to be more players entering the transfer portal. It's like every day there are just more and more and more players. And one of the things we were talking about a little while ago, I had a question about this. First of all, Jake, do you doubt that the NCAA is going to go ahead and grant them that immediate eligibility soon?
Yeah, I think that not only that, but I think the SEC is going to pass the in-conference transfer rule on April 17th.
And that's right what we were talking about. That's what we were wondering, yeah. Because the ACC's done it.
I think it's, yep. No, go ahead, Bill.
No, I was going to say, I mean, since the ACC has, the SEC would have to do that. And it's funny because we were talking fans and coaches – don't want any of their players to leave and go to another school in their conference, but they absolutely want to take anybody who wants to come to their school.
Oh, without a doubt. It's all beauty is in the eye of the beholder, Bill. It's in the eye of the beholder. And to be honest with you, if it passes, I think Auburn's in a really good position to get Xavier Pinson. Not ready to put a prediction out yet. I know he's had Zoom calls with both teams, Auburn and Arkansas. I'm fortunate enough to know his brother pretty well. I think Auburn leads right now. He loves Coach Pearl, loves the family feel of Auburn. You know, we hear that a lot. But I think it's going to pass April 17th. I wouldn't expect a decision from him before that. But, again, you're going to have people that are upset about it when they're leaving their team and people that are happy about it when they're coming to their team. But I do want to say this. I had Andy Kennedy on today, UAB's head coach, one of my favorite guys to interview, very honest. And, you know, my worry is about the super teams. Kind of like we've seen in the NBA. I mean, just look at what the Nets are doing right now. But then you got to realize there's 357 Division I schools, so it's going to be a lot harder to form a super team in the NCAA Division I than it is obviously in the NBA, where you only have 400 jobs available. But, you know, there's almost 1,000 people in the transfer portal right now. I'm not a big fan of having free agency in college athletics. I think it's something where it'll be passed early, and at the end of the day, they'll probably go back and change it. Because I think if you're going to transfer at the same division, at the same level, there needs to be a sacrifice there because, again, it's just going to turn into free agency. And if a kid goes somewhere and as a freshman doesn't like it his first year, he doesn't stick it out and ends up leaving. Now, there's some circumstances where you need to leave. You know, you look at the Dylan Brooks situation where the head coach gets fired. The NCAA is investigating. That's a life-changing deal, but it's going to be interesting. Would not be shocked. I think Greg Brown from Texas, I think he's 50-50 right now and trying to turn pro or going into the portal. And if he goes into the portal, watch out for Auburn.
So I want to get back to something you just said there, Jake, because I think a lot of people feel the way you do, but it does seem like you know that's sort of going the way of the dinosaur, right? It seems like we're going towards. As much as you know, people there are people that don't want as you describe it, free agency in college basketball or college sports.
Let me just say, how do you and you can tell? I want you to continue, Dan, but how do you close Pandora's box?
Yeah, it just seems like we're heading in a different direction where every year you know you're a relationship. If you're a college football player or a college basketball player, at the end of every season, including your freshman season, your relationship is reevaluated on both sides by your coaches and by you, and maybe it doesn't continue. Doesn't it seem like that's where things are going?
Yeah, well, you know, I would say, yeah, I think you're exactly right. Once you open Pandora's box, it's really hard to close it. But if we still had the same rule where scholarships have to get renewed every year, I thought that was a horrible rule. I thought that was very unfair to the players. They obviously changed it back to the 4-year deal. But the way I see it is that there's two tsunamis coming to shore right now. You have the waivers where you can transfer anywhere and the name, image, and likeness, mm-hmm. which to me, I mean, at the J-Boy show, it would be very hypocritical of me to sit here and say, well, I want to get paid by sponsors for my image and likeness and not let players get paid for their image and likeness, especially when we live in a capitalistic society and you got a guy that can be a music major and get paid off a mixtape he makes, even if he's on scholarship to go to a school. But a guy like Javon Quinterly, who started this Jelly Fam deal that just absolutely exploded, can't make money off of that, off of branding. I think that's coming. I'm just very interested to see because the difference between pro and college is the purity of the game. That's really what it is. That's why a lot more people are drawn to the college game. I want to make sure that we don't muddy the waters and too much. But again, you guys are right. Once you open that box, especially in the society we live in, you're not closing it or there's going to be lawsuits. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Before long, the Power Five is going to break away from the NCAA. You want to talk about a dinosaur? The NCAA is going to become a dinosaur because people figured out they're nothing but the middleman.
Talking with Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show, yes, some wild times coming. There's no question about that for the NCAA or what is left. I don't disagree with you there, Jake. I do think there's going to be there'll be a superpower group. I don't know that they're going to call it a conference or whatever, and then there'll be what's left of what is the NCAA.
Well, yeah. Well, at the end of the day, let me ask you this. What really does the NCAA do? They hire firms to go do the job that they're supposed to do. They help sign the contracts. But what do they really do other than make all the money? At the end of the day, the NCAA, and it's selective enforcement. You know, it really is selective enforcement. You can be at Duke and not go to class, but if you're at a smaller school or you're at somebody that's not a blue blood, they're going to hammer you. Because at the end of the day, the NCAA is going to take care of the teams that pay the bills. That's why you'll never see Alabama go on probation. You'll never see Georgia go on probation, but they'll sure hammer Mississippi State or somebody. And see, the thing is, nowadays, the student athlete and even high school athletes have gotten smart. I'll give you a number that'll blow your mind, and I talked about this on the show. Let's just say we had 10-man rosters on every NCAA basketball team. The amount of money that the broadcasting rights that the NCAA would make comes out to $1.4 million per player, and there is not one person at the NCAA that's going to dribble a basketball or make a shot. They're just the middleman, and people now – we didn't have this problem 10, 15, 20 years ago because the money wasn't nearly what it is now. You've got the SEC Network signing with Disney for $375 million, and the players realize, wait a minute, we're the asset, and we're not getting anything. Here's a bowl gift. Here's an Xbox 360. Or, hey, here's a cool backpack that says Final Four. At the end of the day, people, and especially the younger guys, have smartened up, and the NCAA is a dinosaur. And I'll ask again, what really does the NCAA do?
And then we had a question from one of our favorites, Shadow, earlier, wondering and wanting to get our thoughts, and we'd love to get yours, as to what do you think is down the road with Auburn and the NCAA after self-imposing this year, and don't think that didn't have an effect on the way this team played and some of those close games. I think they win some of those close games if they have that carrot out there in front of them. But what are your thoughts? Do you think that when the dust settles, Auburn will finally be able to put this behind them without any further severe sanctions?
Yeah, I don't see any postseason ban after this. I thought self-imposing was genius this year, to be honest with you. I know a lot of people didn't like it. And you're right, Bill. These are human beings. And at the end of the day, you can be the greatest motivator since Winston Churchill, but when you can't play for the prize, that has an effect on you. It just does. It just naturally does. Because you can really only, and I'm using football as an example, you can really only get the guys up for maybe 6 to 7 games to play at the absolute height emotionally and locked in and focused. But I would not be surprised if after this, Bruce Pearl had to sit 10, 15 games. I don't think they're going to knock them for scholarships. What I'm interested to see is how the NCAA treats Oklahoma State that said, we're going to self-impose. Mm-hmm. No, we're not going to self-impose. Never mind. So I think Auburn actually looks like the good kid at the table, and I don't see a postseason ban or anything like that. They've served their time. I think at max, I mean, you may see one scholarship, you know, which is a lot in basketball. We're not talking about a roster of 85 like in football. And Bruce may have to sit some games. But other than that, I think the dust is settled because the NCAA has got a lot bigger problems on their plate right now.
Talking with Jake Crane from the J-Boy Show here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. We'll pivot to football for a brief period before we let you go, Jake. And you know, Auburn's taking the week off, a spring break for the coaches. I saw Brian Harsin with a Mai Tai the other day on campus walking around. So they're really,
I miss that.
They're really enjoying their singing Kokomo. They're really enjoying their time off, but they'll get back to work next week. What are you looking to learn about the team or see between now and the end of spring practice, Jake?
Well, you know, I want to say this first off. I feel terrible for Jeremiah Wright, who tore his ACL. A guy I know the coaches are really excited about. A guy that was really coming on. But if you're going to tear it, this is the time to do it, especially with the advances we have in medicine. I actually have an episode coming out with one of the top NFL trauma doctors, Rick Martinez, and we're talking about, you know, the turnaround time and guys being able to play, you know, 4 or 5 months after tearing an ACL. But what I'm looking for is Auburn going to go back to Auburn up front? I don't think the personnel on the offensive line as a whole is very good. You look at Rodarius Ham, who's an NFL guard. It's unfair to ask Rodarius Ham to play tackle in this league with the defensive ends. He's a guard. Alec Jackson has to make huge strides. But I'm going to see which JUCO – is Brendan Coffey going to step up? Is Killian Zaire going to step up? These guys, all this hoopla, and you sign junior college guys to play. But it comes down to up front. And is Auburn going to get back to turning it into a fist fight up front? I think Will Friend is a heck of a coach. I know he's going to get them motivated. They're not going to be afraid. I thought Auburn was a little bit apprehensive up front last year. But I'm really interested to see as well. You know, we hear about Javarius Johnson and all these guys at receiver. But I want to see how Auburn paces and sequences their offense, getting Bo Nix under center a little bit, mixing up the play action, and will they use the tight end? But the spring, and I'll say this till I'm blue in the face, I had Jacob Hester on, we talked about this, the team is formed in the spring and in the summer. It's not formed in fall camp. And the foundation that you have to lay in the spring is that we're going to be tough as hell, we're We're going to fight every time we get a chance, and we're going to find out who, when the lights come on. That's why I liked when they had the open practice the other day. It's not just about the fans. It's about seeing who likes that moment, who doesn't like that moment. But will Auburn turn the game into a fist fight up front again? Because if you're going to beat Georgia and you're going to beat Alabama, it's not about the skill players. There's a bunch of skill players running around out there. We all know there's some great ones and some good ones, but it's who up front is willing to do the dirty work, who wants to go finish guys, and I think Brian Harsin understands that. The roster structure is what it is right now. That was Gus Malzahn's biggest weakness. That's the difference between him and Nick Saban outside of being able to recruit and being able to go talk to a kid as the head coach and finish the deal, is will Auburn become a force up front again? Because if you don't, all the other stuff is just dressing. There's no salad.
Great stuff, as always, Jake. Before we let you go, you know, fill everybody in on, you know, who you've had and who you've got coming up, if you can. Give out some of that info, but again, yeah, and how they get hold of the Jay Boy Show.
Oh, definitely. Well, we're on YouTube. It's the Jay Boy Show, THE JBOY SHOW. Loving the new studio that we're in. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. We don't do an episode over 35 minutes because I want you to be able to drive to work. You got a 30-minute commute, be able to listen to an episode. We just had Damian Craig on, just had Ronnie Brown on, got a couple guys, one guest coming on next week, former Auburn Tiger. Don't want to release that one yet, but we got Marcus Spears coming on Thursday, talking a little draft, talking some SEC. He's really high on the Bryce Harsin hire. Brian Harsin and I really likes him, and got our first SEC head football coach coming on Friday. Not going to give that one away, but we've got big things coming. You know, we always bring Auburn guys on, but, you know, we don't talk politics, guys. We're just talking ball, schemes, recruiting, stuff like that. And also got the number one defensive tackle in the country coming on that Auburn's in on, Walter Nolan. Expect that one soon. I think Auburn's going to have a chance there, so come check us out.
Great stuff again. Thanks, Jake, man. Have a great rest of the week.
Anytime. You guys stay safe out there.
All right. Jake Crane from the Jay Boy Show joining us as he does every Tuesday, and we really appreciate his time. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down on the Tuesday Drive.
At Jackson 067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final minute or so of the Tuesday Drive. Again, our thanks to Jake Crane from the Jay Boy Show joining us. If you didn't get a chance to hear it, you can check it out on the podcast.
That's right. Podcast The Drive, available wherever you listen to podcasts. ESPN 106.7 app, ESPNAU.com podcast center, Apple, Google, Spotify, all presented by the Alabama Farmers Federation. Also wanted to say it's great being on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 up in the 280 corridor.
Absolutely right. Now, we mentioned earlier, Jason Caldwell from inside the Auburn Tigers, AUTigers.com, on with us tomorrow. As we'll know the Final Four, we'll preview Auburn-Arkansas baseball and get his thoughts on the open week in football and much more.
I think UCLA wins tonight, Bill. I think they're going to do it. I think the Bruins are going
to
do it.
I wouldn't mind. I mean, my bracket's shot. Enjoy the basketball tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.